Hello, welcome to another episode of the SRUC podcast. My name is Rosie Free and I'm the Communications Officer at SRUC. Today I'm joined by SAC consultant Harry Fisher to talk about the importance of bats to biodiversity and our farming landscapes in Scotland. Hello Harry, welcome to the podcast.
Hi Rosie, thanks for having me on.
First, can you tell us about the different bat species in Scotland?
Yeah, absolutely. So Scotland has 10 species of bats, which might not sound that impressive when you consider we've got something like 26 species of ladybugs in Scotland. But when you consider there's 49 species of terrestrial mammals, it kind of tallies up pretty quickly, which means that a fifth of our land mammal species are bats. And the most common type of bat that you're likely to find in Scotland and in around farmyards is the common pipistrelle bat and the soprano pipistrelle bat. You'll see these kind of fluttering above your head in kind of summer dusks, nights. Mm-hmm. These guys are likely to roost in the kind of cracks of old buildings and trees. You can find them kind of fluttering around your garden and your farmsteading.
What other ones could we find? Were that those the main ones?
Those are the kind of most common too, but there's plenty of other ones. The other kind of common ones are likely to be the brown long-eared bat. As the name suggests, it's brown with long ears. It likes to roost in roof spaces and forage around trees. There's the Derbenton bat, which you'll usually see hovering around kind of water courses and standing water, hoovering up insects on the surface. And if you see a bat kind of absolutely bombing it quite high up in the sky in the south of Scotland, that's likely to be the noctule bat. Then there are more rare bats like the Leisler's bat, which is found around woodlands, mostly in the southwest of Scotland. There's the Natter's bat, which roosts closely to woodland, mostly in Dumfries and Galloway, Ayrshire and the borders. But you sometimes get them here and there all the way as north as Elgin. And then some really rare bats like the Whiskered bat, which is found around the south of Scotland, and Brandt's bat, which is only found in a handful of locations in Scotland.
Why is it a good sign if bats are present on a farm?
Yeah, so it's good to see bats because bats are what we call an indicator species. So they're usually an indicator that in the area that you see them, it means it's pretty good biodiversity. As bats need healthy insect populations to feed on, the average pipistrelle bat can eat around 3,000 midges a night. So, they take some feeding. And they also need complex habitats like old trees to roost in, hedgerows to navigate across. So where you're noticing them is usually a good sign that biodiversity is in a good state. And then where you're not seeing them is usually a good sign to say where could biodiversity be improved. So alongside bats being quite a good indicator of how biodiversity is getting on in different parts of your farm, they do play a role in controlling insect populations. We don't fully understand this in the UK, but there is an area of research at the moment. But in other parts of the world, such as North America, there's studies that have shown that bats controlling kind of pest insects is worth up to $22 billion per year and the money that it saves in crop protection. While in Europe, countries like Italy have been known to install bat boxes near cattle herds so bats can predate on insects that are bothering the livestock. So they're kind of good for two reasons, and they're a good indicator of where biodiversity is good, and they are likely to have some kind of controlling effect on pest insects, but this isn't an area fully understood in the UK yet.
Okay, so obviously it's beneficial for farmers to have bats on their farms. So what kind of farm habitats are bats attracted to?
Yeah, so habitats beneficial to bats are usually either those that produce a lot of insects, provide shelter for them to roost, or link up different habitats so that they can get around. Mm-hmm. On that kind of last point of linking up, bats rely on echolocation to get around in the dark. Obviously, they can't see a lot at that time. And the echolocation is where they produce a super high frequency that is undetectable to the human ear. And then this will bounce off different things in the landscape, like trees and hedgerows, and bounce back into the bat's ears and will paint a picture in its mind of what the kind of surrounding habitat looks like around them.
Okay.
So it's important for habitats such as woodland and hedgerows to give them something to have this call bounce off of, or else it's quite difficult for them to get across large, vast landscapes without this kind of 3D structure. For habitats that provide a lot of insects, things like ponds, watercourses, species-rich grassland and hedgerows in good condition can provide a lot of insects for them to feed on. And woodlands, old trees and fields and old farm buildings can provide that sort of habitat that will provide nooks and crannies for them to find shelter in, to give them roosts throughout all the year.
I mean, it's fascinating. So can you talk us through a day in the life of a bat? So what's their typical day like?
Yeah, so like I said before, they're mostly nocturnal, so they'll be out kind of at night. You won't really see them during the day. They often come out around dusk, so anywhere between half an hour before sunset, and then they'll be active throughout the night, kind of catching insects until about half an hour after sunrise is kind of the latest that you'll see them.
What's their cycle over the year? What are the different things that are happening with bats over the year?
Yeah, so throughout the year, the kind of cycle goes that bats will mate around September and October before they go into hibernation. They'll go into the hibernation during the colder months of November up until March, and then they'll kind of reappear. And then this is when the females will wake up and kind of begin foraging like crazy, catching lots and lots of insects, trying to build up those fat reserves between April and May. And then around this time is when the females will go off to find a maternity roost. And for some species, this can be up to hundreds of bats, female bats, kind of roosting together to raise their young. The females will usually have just the one pup that they will feed on milk from the fat reserves. And they'll do this up until the pup's big enough to go out on its own. And this is probably until about July to August. The pup will go out on its own. And then the mating season will begin again. So you'll see these kind of great mating displays where you see bats, quite a few bats kind of in kind of August until October in the sky doing these kind of mating displays. And they'll begin mating. And then once they're pregnant, they'll go into hibernation again to have a pup in the following year.
When the females are in their maternity roost, are the male bats just in their normal locations that they would be the rest of the time?
Yeah, they are very much shunted out. They're in the bat dog house, if you want. They are,
and they've done their job.
Yeah, they are shunted to the side, and they'll they'll just roost on their own mostly. Maybe one or two male bats together, but mostly on their own, just in kind of small nooks and crannies here and there.
Bats are a protected species. So why is this, and what does it mean for farmers?
Bats were kind of given protected species status because they've seen a kind of massive decline in the last 50 years to the point that there was a real worry that the species that I mentioned earlier might go extinct in the UK. This is because they only have the one pup a year. It means populations are really, really sensitive to disturbance. You know, it doesn't take a lot for something to go wrong and kind of whole populations to crash. So now bats and their roost are protected by law, which means it's a legal offence to damage or destroy somewhere that a bat is using for a roost. So we kind of touched on what this can include, but this can be things like old farm buildings that you see with kind of lots of cracks on the kind of exterior that a bat could nestle its way into, or an old roof space that many bats could use. It could be old trees that have cracks and fissures that bats can get into. Trees and buildings with thick ivy around them. Bats are known to kind of roost in ivy. That's usually the kind of rule is that if it's kind of thicker than your forearm, then a bat could likely get in behind it and use that as a bit of shelter. So these are the different kind of habitats that a bat could get into and use as a roost, and these are the things that are protected by law. So there is some positive here in that there's evidence that this protection is working to some degree, and some bat species are beginning to see an increase. They're coming back, and hopefully we'll get them back to their kind of more natural levels. But this, you know, can only go on so long as we do the stuff that's working, and this kind of protection is what's working.
Yeah, that's really good news. And is there anything else? I mean, you've mentioned the type of habitats that they like. Is there anything else that farmers can do to increase the number of bats on their farm?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a couple of things farmers can do. I would say the first thing that farmers could do is just go a walk in around dusk. It's quite interesting that once you actually start looking, you know, the more you look, the more you see, you will begin to notice where you're seeing bats. And and where you're not seeing bats on the farm, and it's a kind of good indicator for both where you are seeing bats. It can tell you where your kind of land management practices are beneficial for biodiversity as a whole. And then maybe areas where you're not seeing any bats, it's an indicator of these would be the best places to for some kind of implementation of new habitat or new habitat structure or new land management practices to benefit wider biodiversity in this area. So yeah, it's good to just get out to see where you are, where you aren't seeing them.
Okay.
But some actual kind of tips that farmers could maybe go and notice on their farm and see what they could and couldn't implement is one could be going out and seeing where steading lights could be turned off around dusk. So sometimes maybe steading lights are left on unnecessarily, okay, where there's causing this kind of light pollution that's disruptive to bats roosting and bats foraging. So just seeing where you can turn off a light where it's not being used. Another could be where you could install a bat box on the farm. You can pick up a bat box for between £20 and £30, and it can be nice to put onto buildings anywhere up to kind of 4 meters off the ground. One could be planting trees in and around the steading. Like we say, if you've got a kind of that maternity roost in maybe one of your old buildings, having trees nearby will give the kind of either the pregnant bats or the bats with pups local access to kind of greater insect populations for them to feed on if you have kind of those habitats that support more insects. Another is have a look to see where you've got ivy and shrub growing around the setting. These can likely be benefiting bats at the minute, so consider where these can remain safely. Sometimes there's an urge to kind of take ivy down, but if it can stay up safely, you know, strongly consider this and, you know, see where it could be implemented on other buildings and trees. And
okay,
yeah, implement some of the habitats that I mentioned earlier that are beneficial to bats across the farmland. So things like hedgerows linking up different habitats, consider ponds dotted around the farm, species rich grasslands, any watercourses, consider planting these up with trees, improving the condition of the water so that they support more insects, which will then support more bats. So there's plenty of funding available through the Agri-Environment Climate Schemes that can be used to improve or create new habitat that's beneficial to bats.
Can you tell us more about an event you're holding with the Ayrshire and Arran Bat Group?
Yeah, we're holding an event on the 2nd of May at Clane Castle with Ayrshire and Arran Bat Group. And the kind of aim of this is to take any farmers that are interested in how they can improve bats on their farmland out. We'll talk a bit about the things they can implement, and then we'll be going out with bat detectors to show how to identify bats, show the different habitats that bats are using and how they're using it, just to give a more kind of real feel to bats and bats on farmland. So that's, 2nd of May at Clane Castle. I think we'll be able to provide a link maybe to the events page for people to click on if they want to enrol in it. There's 20 spaces, so get there before it fills up.
Okay, perfect. And if farmers want to find more information about how they can support bats on farms, where can they find that?
Yeah, we've just created a publication under the Farm Advisory Service, focusing on bats and a lot of the kind of things I've touched on today, but it gives you a list of all the different species of bats with a map showing you where you're likely to find them, so you can go and check whereabouts your farm is in the country and see what bat species you would be likely to find, and then all the different places that you, all the different habitats that you could find them on your farm, and some top tips for how you could improve it. So yeah, we can provide a link to that as well maybe in the show notes if people want to go onto FAS and learn a bit about what they can do for the bats.
Yes, we'll do that. That's perfect. Well, that's been really interesting. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge about bats with us, and good luck with the event on the 2nd of May.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Yeah, it's always a pleasure.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Cheers then.